B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
From the Tom Fair Tire Studio, Gasper Murray 98.5, the Sports Hub. Chris Gasper, not here for the moment at least. He is out in San Francisco on assignment for the Boston Globe to cover game two of the NBA Finals, Celtics Warriors. And I also say for the moment because Chris will be with me for the Celtics show about an hour from now. But in the meantime, Chris Gasper all snuggled up in bed in his hotel room as Chris needs his beauty rest. And no, I'm not even remotely joking. So, in the meantime, we have Mass Live's Brian Robb behind the glass producing the show. Been a minute since we have seen each other, B-Rob. I do want to get your perspective on the Celtics and the fact that they've not only made the NBA Finals against the Warriors, but they already lead this thing one game to none. So good to see you. But we'll get to that in a moment. I did want to mention a couple other things here off the top before we get into that, one of which I do need your feedback on. At 617-779-0985. And we can weave it into the conversation during this first hour and during the 1 o'clock hour as well. And that is this. Who are the New England media people that are universally beloved? This question has been stuck in my head since yesterday afternoon when I, during the headlines on Felger and Maz, gave just a very subtle nod to former meteorologist Al Caprillion, mostly known in the New Hampshire market, but, you know, those stations bleed into Massachusetts as well. When I was mentioning the Red Sox-A's pitching matchup, it was Nathan Eovaldi, Red Sox obviously, going up against Oakland's James Caprillion, and I would throw in the occasional Al, good evening. And I really just did this to entertain myself, but thankfully, a bunch of you listening, you got the reference. And then there was this deluge of tweets that followed about how many of you loved Al Caprillion and his quirky delivery. I don't think that there was a bad tweet in the bunch, honestly, just like scrolling through. And that's basically impossible on that sewer of an app. So it got me thinking, who else besides Al Caprillion, good evening, is universally beloved in the history of New England media? Those who everyone gets a kick out of, nobody's really got a bad word to say about. And I'll tell you right now, it's none of us. It's none of us here. Yeah, like sport. No, it's none of us. You deal in takes. You're bound to piss somebody off. Case in point, let me weave this story in as well. Last Friday, had the day off. Golf at Mount Hood. I get buzzed by a golf ball by this hulking mass of a man who comes up in his cart with his buddy. I mean, it goes whew, right by my head. He comes up in his cart with his buddy, and he half-jokingly says, yeah, you know, I was aiming for you, and if it was Felger, I would have made sure to hit you. Good times. But hey, you know, this is what it is. You reap what you sow in the take game. It is what it is. I know how that's how it goes here. You're bound to piss somebody off with a take. But who would that not happen to? Who wouldn't get buzzed by a golf ball by a hulking mass of a man at Mount Hood? Al Caprillion is certainly one of those people. No one's going to buzz Al Caprillion. WBZ's Dan Roach. Roachy, definitely one of those people. I think Roachy makes that list. I'm dating myself here. I'm now an old. Maybe Chet Natt from back in the day. Jack Williams, Wednesday's child. Jack Williams. Jack Williams isn't getting buzzed by a golf ball at Mount Hood. So again, I've been trying to rack my brain, trying to come up with who would make that list of New England media people that are universally beloved. And I need some of your help with that. So again, 617-779-0985. B-Rob, anyone come to mind for you? Like just...
Yeah, I got a couple for you. Gorman.
Gorman. Definitely Mike Gorman. Yep. A mensch, universally beloved. Nobody's got a bad word to say about. Yep, Mike Gorman definitely makes that list.
And one more, I think Eck is on that list too. Dennis Eckersley, who is, I might be in a different category because he's not, obviously he was a player first, but I think right now, like, you're hard to find anyone that has a bad word to say about him.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's another one. And I know this gets into, and I really try, like, there's no hackier thing to do. Like, it's the Mount Rushmore of most universally beloved. But this, again, this stemmed yesterday just from me, like, trying to entertain myself with the Al Caprillion thing. And it's just, I've been thinking about it. But yes, Gorman and Eck definitely make that list. Gorman especially, absolutely. Another thing on my mind this morning, also stemming from the hellscape that usually is Twitter. And it was pointed out by the great Boston Sports Inf on Twitter. If you're not following him, please do. Always great stuff there. At Boston Sports Inf. He didn't have enough room for the O. It was 23 years ago yesterday, as pointed out by Boston Sports Inf, June 4th, 1999. Pedro Martinez, 16 strikeouts and a 5-1 win over the Atlanta Braves at Fenway Park. Pedro's 16 Ks were the most in a game in his career at that point. I retweeted this and said it was one of the top five electric sporting events I've ever attended. I remember it to this day. Again, regular season game, early summer, but people were literally booing the groundouts. It was insanity. Regular season game, too, and it makes my top five most electric sporting events I've ever attended. So there was a follow-up tweet from a fellow by the name of Rick Collins who said, would you prefer one more season of peak Pedro or one more season of peak Brady? And this also kept me up last night while I'm thinking about the most beloved, you know, New England's media people, and no one's got a bad word to say about who makes that list. But this, too, would I prefer one more season of peak Pedro or one more season of peak Brady? If you listen with any regularity, you know, I'm pants off for Brady, a Brady Bobo. Baseball, really not my thing anymore. I tier my sports and my rooting and interest in terms of, like, what I'm really interested in, what I'm watching, what I'm buzzing about. Football, hockey, basketball, kind of a coin flip. Precipitous drop off, Grand Canyon type drop off to baseball. That's, but I loved baseball as a kid. In around the Pedro era, I go with Pedro, believe it or not. I would prefer one more peak season of Pedro over one more season of peak Brady. Because with Brady, look, as great as he was, is, continues to be, it did, if we're being honest with each other, it did kind of become rote, right? Especially those last few years here. We'll leave 2019 to the side, even though that was that fake 12-4 year. Like, I hated that year. It was all coming apart at the seams. Gross. But the second era of the 20 years of dominance of the Patriots, those games, the regular season games, like, yeah, it was great to go to. It was always a party, but it was like, okay, we'll wait for, you know, 12-4, 13-3. Talk to me the AFC Championship game. It became kind of boring and predictable. Those Pedro games, if you're old enough to remember and you were lucky enough to live during that era and, like, really pay attention and go to some of those games, there was nothing like it. Like, it was what I would imagine, like, going to, you know, peak Beatles or seeing, like, Guns N' Roses at their peak. Wild, wild stuff. And people were booing groundouts at that game. And the buzz in Fenway will never be replicated. The buzz leading up to a Pedro start will never be replicated. I would prefer one more peak season of Pedro over one more season of peak Brady. I really would. Because it was just like, get me to the Super Bowl. Get me to the championship weekend. The rest of it, again, it kind of became rote and still kind of is with Brady. Those Pedro starts, you never knew what the hell you were going to get. You always knew you could be on the precipice of something special. And the buzz in the city on those days leading up to those nights was insanity. And so, yeah, I would love to relive that one more time. So, okay, with that, obviously, Celtics up one game to none on the Golden State Warriors in the NBA Finals. Like I said, B-Rob, I think it's been a couple of weeks since we've seen each other. At that time, that Miami series, oh, God, that slug, was going back and forth. It shouldn't, in my opinion, have gone seven games. I found it abhorrent, really, that they didn't close out in game six. They certainly could have used it in terms of rest, especially for guys like Rob Williams, who moved like a, you know, like a log, playing only about 14 minutes and change in game seven. But hey, they got past them, and I'm glad that they did. I'm happy that they're here. I was bothered how that series wrapped up, but that they've made it this far, that they win game one in the fashion that they did in the blowout fourth quarter. Give me some of your takes and thoughts on the Celtics thus far over the last, you know, week and a half.
I mean, coming off of, would that have been the worst loss in Celtics history, period, if they lost game seven, the way that ended? Jim, we haven't obviously talked about that game, but that was up 13. The way that went with Smart being front and center there, I can't even imagine what would have happened if that went down.
I don't think it's hyperbolic to say, Brian, that we would be talking about one of the great chokes in the history of the city. Not just the Celtics. I tweeted after game six on Friday. that the 2019 Bruins were about to be off the hook as maybe the biggest chokers in this city over the last, you know, two decades plus. You want to throw the 07 Patriots in there too, so be it. But I think that Game 7 home loss to the Blues, like, that is just inexcusable. And had the Celtics, who were clearly more talented than the Heat, who couldn't hit the side of a barn, great performance by Jimmy Butler in Game 6, LeBron-esque from 10 years ago, all of that, tip your cap there to his performance. But they were better than Miami. Had they blown that, yeah, maybe the biggest gag job in the history of this city.
It's incredible. So you come off of that, and you go into Game 1 against a Warriors team that hadn't lost a Game 1 at home in like half a decade in the playoffs. This is an incredible, like 10 Game 1 wins in a row when they open up at home. And for them to pull that off in that game, to withstand what Curry did, to withstand a third quarter, which looked like honestly what the Heat did to them in a bunch of third quarters in that East Finals, and to come back and literally play the perfect fourth quarter. And to be, I start with Ime Udoka in terms of if you want to head out the credit from that game, the maneuverings he did, the way the lineups he went with, sticking with Pritchard over Smart for the majority of that run, as you guys talked about on Felger Mass yesterday, that took guts. Like, no coach does that. Everyone defaults to the guy. Okay, but do we have to go back to their starters? It's 6 minutes left. We have to go back to them. No. He stuck with it. Jaylen Brown got them going. Al Horford kind of carried the torch there, and everything just came together. And now I think they have the Warriors just strictly, they have them rattled now. Just listening to Draymond after that game, I don't know what, like, they're showing off confidence here, but I think if you look more closely at the matchup here, it's, they have a lot to be scared of.
Yeah, I agree. It felt like kind of a one-man show, too, in terms of it just being Steph Curry. I was interested to see, like, I've seen, like, bits and pieces here and there. Like, I mostly watched, of the Warriors in this run, I did watch a couple of games against Memphis, and one of which happened to be the closeout game, Game 6, in which Klay Thompson goes off for the 30 points. But I keep reading, like, how, you know, statistically speaking, with some of the defensive metrics, like Klay Thompson's actually been a liability for the Warriors, which I'm like, I got to take this with a grain of salt because it's nerd stats. So I was interested to see Klay Thompson in this first game. And you know what? I kind of get what they're talking about. He did look like a defensive liability. He doesn't. And I get it. The guy's basically not played over the last 2 years. But I also thought maybe there'd be a little boost in his game. Maybe he's got something to prove along with Steph Curry and all the talk of him wanting to get MVP in the finals because he's never achieved that and have it be his own thing and getting out of the shadow of the Durant years. But Klay Thompson, too, I thought would try to play with something to prove. I thought he kind of sucked. And so coming out of that, B-Rob, I was like, well, this kind of feels like a one-man team. And if this is what the Warriors are, not only do I feel good in my prediction of the Celtics win in seven, I can kind of understand why people like Michael Hawley on BST are saying, no, this series is going to maybe go like five games and the Celtics are going to smoke them.
It's because you look at, like you said, the supporting cast, who can you rely on? If Thompson isn't going to be like a max player in this series, then what's left for the Warriors? Like Poole, who was garbage in game one.
Awful.
Draymond, who can't shoot. Andrew Wiggins, who...
I thought he was pretty good.
He was good, but like he's not going to be Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum. And so if those are your options here, then the Celtics have to feel pretty good about themselves. Because the Warriors, they shot the lights out for most of that game.
Yeah.
The supporting guys, like, you can't ask for more from Porter or like Iguodala hit off the bench too. And so it's like, what do you do now if the Celtics downsize and you just don't have an answer for it?
Yeah, and I'm with you, too. I read your column at Mass Live on the gutsiness of Ime Udoka, because I do think so many coaches would defer back to their veterans, especially multi-veterans with big egos like Marcus Smart. And look, he did come back into that game late and hit some shots, but I do, part of me, look, the skeptic in me, again, you deal in takes, you're going to piss people off. There is part of me that's like, is this going to be potentially problematic? So I want to get your thoughts on that, because I do credit, I'm with you, Udoka, for how he handled that fourth quarter. But could that potentially be a little bit problematic for the Celtics as this series continues? We still have to wait another day for it, of course. And they say,
of course.
They say tip-offs at 8. That'll be like 8:35. These effing games. Although, and I also credit, Speedy game. Game one. Love.
Hugely underrated.
Oh, how about that? Just, you knew within the first few minutes, like, oh, this is what it's supposed to look like. Not this root canal of a series we just had to watch between the Celtics and Heat. This is what basketball, modern day NBA, is supposed to look like. So yeah, oh no, that game done by 11:30. Great. All right. Your thoughts on the things that I all mentioned here. Again, if you have thoughts on who the most beloved, universally beloved people are in New England media. I think we've come up with some good names so far, but I need your help with that. That little Pedro Brady discussion. And, of course, we'll be heavy on the Celtics as they are in the NBA Finals. We get ready for Game 2 tomorrow night. Your calls at 617-779-0985. Coming up next here on Gasper and Murray.
Chris Gasper, Big Jim Murray, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Better.
This is Chris Gasper.
I'm not the one who's red-faced and ranting, so who's the baby?
And Big Jim Murray.
Takes in your face, sports.
Gasper and Murray. On Boston's home for sports. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Yeah, I think that was kind of his message from day one, just to challenge me to be, you know, the best player that I can be and improve, you know, other areas of my game. And, you know, we watched a lot of film throughout the course of the season. Games are just areas, you know, things I could improve on. And, you know, obviously playmaking was one, drawing a lot of attention, you know, just to help the team out as much as possible. You know, so, you know, he's done a great job of challenging myself and, you know, just the group.
Jason Tatum on head coach Ime Udoka and how he has reached these kids. Speaking after the game one win. A big fourth quarter blowout of Golden State Warriors in game one of the NBA Finals on Thursday night. It's Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub. Chris will join me in like 40 minutes when he finally wakes up in San Francisco. So the coaching job of Ime Udoka, I don't think there's any question. He did reach these kids. And if this was still Brad Stevens, they certainly would not be in this spot. That's not really to knock Brad Stevens. I just think that the two-note factor was real. And a change needed to be made there. So I think Udoka was able to really make a dent, like right after game one, B-Rob, in that, you know, he basically called them, for all intents and purposes, like a bunch of bitches when he said, y'all got punked out there. And so I do think that just from a, I don't know, like a human standpoint, maybe, for lack of a better term, or just from a, I don't know, peer-to-peer standpoint, because he's a former player, like, I don't know, I think he does get respect in that room. But some of those moves he made in that fourth quarter specifically, sticking with White and Peyton Pritchard for long stretches. You see Marcus Smart on the bench. Perhaps I'm reading too much into this, as I'm wont to do, but we did mention this yesterday after there was a big three by Derek White at one point during that tidal wave of offense in that fourth quarter. Everyone on the bench up, threes in the air. Ah! Marcus Smart, arms crossed. Like, I should be in this game. So, I don't know. Am I reading too much into that? Is this potentially problematic? Do we have to watch Marcus Smart, and how does he need to go out there in game two and be like, well, now it's my time to shine. I got something to prove, because as we all know, Marcus does fancy himself at times like an off-brand Steph Curry.
I would say I would be worried more about this, Jim, if he didn't come in later and made those shots. If he came in, didn't do anything, and was kind of pouting, if you will, like you said, from those you can see on the bench there in a couple of those spots, then that'd be like, okay, is this something that we're going to have to keep an eye on here? The fact that he kind of came and kind of took the baton from Pritchard in that spot. And I think now Ime has enough capital with Smart where this shouldn't be like, this is like, okay, yeah, this is the finals, Marcus. You weren't playing bad, but guess what? Pritchard was playing better. And so we did it. And guess what? It worked. So I think Ime, the way he's been able to handle this team all year long through like the crap that they've been through and through like Smart's comments at the very beginning of the year, I think makes me feel better now that Smart's just going to kind of fall in line here. So, yeah, coach, whatever you want to do.
Let me ask you this, too, in terms of the defensive game plan. Maybe I'm fooling myself here, and certainly Felger and Maz looked at me with a side eye yesterday. Letting Steph Curry get his, I feel like, to an extent, is their game plan by Ime Udoka and the Celtics. Yeah, they're going to defend him, but I also do think that they kind of, to me, they purposely baited him into thinking a few of his shots were going to be easy open looks, because some of those that he got off in the first quarter, most of them look at Steph Curry, there's nothing he can do about. But there is a few, B-Rob, where there's no one in a Celtics uniform within 5 or 10 feet of him. So, I don't know. I think they want to try to run him ragged until he was gassed, and he was definitely gassed in that fourth quarter, because I think they're going to try to run him down and maybe focus and get up in the face of everybody else. Am I nuts for thinking that, or was it just bad defense early?
I think it was more bad defense early, but to be honest, I think what you're saying is their strategy for the series. From the same, like early on, they just had like miscommunication, so he got like super wide open as opposed to just single coverage. But a lot of other teams in the playoffs, Jim, they throw the game plan is, okay, we got to throw two guys at Kerr. We have to, like, make, you know, shut him down. I don't think you're going to see that from him. You thought that over the rest of the game. It's like, we're going to play good, hard defense there. We're going to make him work, but we're not going to let other guys get easy open looks or layups. And so if that tactic works, it obviously seemed to work in game one when he, like you said, he was kind of looked worn down in the fourth quarter there. And he's in his mid-30s now. He's not like a young buck anymore. So that over a seven-game series, that might be a winning bet here.
And I also think you can't play every minute unless you're Jimmy Butler, basically.
Right.
You do have to manage the time. I also think Steve Kerr kind of helped ice him out. Like, he was so hot in that first quarter too. Like, I don't know. Could Kerr have managed that a little bit differently?
You'd think so, because 21 points. I know it's scheduled rest, but again, this is what Ime didn't do in the fourth quarter. It's like, yeah, this is the game plan, but like, guess what? You have like one of the best shooters on the planet who can't miss. Maybe play him for the start of the second quarter, extend that lead if you're only up by four. And so, you know, choreographing what you're supposed to do clearly, I think, worked against Kerr in that front.
All right, again, to open the show, I mentioned yesterday during the headlines, I was doing a subtle nod to Al Kaprielian, meteorologist, former meteorologist up in New Hampshire, who would always start his broadcast saying, "Good evening." And I did this because Red Sox pitching matchup against the A's, it was Eovaldi against James Kaprielian, so I'd throw in the good evening. And then the deluge of tweets, everyone loves Al Kaprielian. So it had me thinking, who are some of the other just universally beloved media people in New England? Brendan in Rhode Island, you're first up here on Casper Murray this morning. Hi, Brendan.
Hey, guys. How you doing this morning?
Good. What's up?
So I think if you're going to throw Eck on that list, who personally I would leave off, that's a whole different story. Jerry Remy and Don Orsillo, you know, the voice of the childhood and the dynamic between the two of them was unbelievable. And they just got so excited about the game, and it was just unbelievable to live through that era
yep,
of
there's
broadcasting.
Brendan, good on that, too. Definitely Don. And Remy, too, who I never met. I think if there was ever going to be any kind of like, I don't want to speak ill of the dead, but if there was any like knock or like people that would say like, well, you know, the whole thing with his son. But yes, no, if we're just talking like you tune in, people, I mean, look at how people still talked about that Orsillo thing that happened with the Red Sox like a month and a half ago. So yes, you know, I think that they would be making that list of universally beloved. Ozzy in Fall River next year on Gasper Murray. Hi, Ozzy.
Hey, Frank Carpano, more Southern New England, not in Thomas Rowland, WJAI. Everybody loves Frank. He's retired now, but well-loved character.
I'll take your word for it, Ozzy. That's a name I'm not familiar with, so doesn't make my list. But I'm sure he's a gem of a person. Tony in Stoneham, we haven't heard from in a little while, on the Celtics, up one game in the finals. Hi, Tony.
How you doing, guys? I listen to you all the time, but I have to get you on my computer because my radio broke. But anyway, I wish your show was on TV, too. You got a great show. Celtics, here's the thing we got to really worry about. What it took for the Celtics to beat them. It took figures that they're probably not going to meet again. All the three-pointers that they made and the guys who were making them. And Tatum only 12 points, but he had, what do you have, 10 or 11 assists?
He's, what, 3 for 17? Yeah, no, he had 12 assists. And,
yeah, 12 assists.
Yeah, and two turnovers.
Yeah, but that's the thing that's got me concerned is how real is it that they're going to repeat the numbers that they put up in the fourth period?
Thanks, Tony. Well, Tony kind of echoing the sentiments of one Draymond Green, who after the game, I appreciate Draymond's honesty, and I'm sure many people
are. It's great for us.
Yeah, it's great in terms of content. I'm sure a lot of Celtics fans will be tired of him by the end of tomorrow night. But he did essentially say what Tony just said, like, I mean, come on, we're talking about, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he basically said, like, what, you know, Derek White, it's Al Horford, Marcus Smart hitting these threes. Like, come on, is this sustainable? But we've been saying this for so long, and I've been one of these people, too. Like, there's no way they're going to be able to hit at this rate. Well, if you stretch it out over, say this thing just goes seven, can they do it four times? Yes. As proven during this run, the answer is yes.
The thing on that Draymond needs to remember is, yeah, like, you're not going to have 75% shooting from three. But the Celtics were the best offense in the NBA in the second half of the season. It doesn't look pretty every night, but they have shown that capability. And on top of that, the Warriors' defense is not the Heat or the Bucks' defense. I think they probably had a sigh of breath of fresh air, like going out on the floor, be like, oh, we don't have the crap beaten out of us right by like Jimmy Butler and PJ Tucker. Instead, we have Klay Thompson and like Andrew Wiggins. Great. Like, we're going to be able to get going in these games. And And that's where I think if you're Draymond, you have to kind of look at it and be like, okay, we need to get a little more scared of these guys. Maybe have a little more respect for what they did.
All right. Continue to take your thoughts on the Celtics going into game 2, 617-779-0985. Again, that beloved media personality topic, if you want to weigh in on that as well. I do have a thought on the Bruins, who have now had two consecutive Friday news dumps, and the timing of them, again, very convenient. I want to touch on that coming up next as well here on Gaspar Murray.
That's an aberration, which I freely admit.
It's Gaspar and Murray.
I'm drunk, you're gross, let's go.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Chris Gasper.
Woo-hoo!
Jim Murray.
Give me fuel, give me fire.
Give me that which I desire.
It's Gaspar and Murray. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Jaylen Brown. Right side, bumped by Looney. Can't get past him. Pushed past in the corner. Grant Williams returns to Jaylen Brown. He's going to try a three over Looney. Didn't like it. Front iron, no good. The rebound step. Long lead, looking for Looney. He catches it and is blocked at the rim by Jaylen Brown. A great catch by Looney and a better defensive play by Jaylen Brown.
Numbers going back the other
Derek
way.
Derek White for Jaylen. He blows by Jordan Poole and flushes it hard with the right hand.
Man, outstanding play on both ends of the floor.
Jaylen Brown. Pull up top of the circle on Wiggins, rips it through, and the Celtics have scored 10 straight to tie the game. Timeout, Steve Kerr. Celtics scoring free and easy right now.
Reel them back in. Mike Fisherman out there in the base. Ooh, Cass, bring it back.
Jaylen Brown straight away, 11 on the shot clock against Klay Thompson. Now Poole jumps out at him. Jaylen's going to pull up, shoot a three right over him and hit it. And the Celtics are within seven.
Making a move.
Iguodala drives, gives up a layup to throw a pass back out to the wing that's deflected, stolen by Jaylen. His lead for Peyton Pritchard, who scores in the left hand. 94-89. Derek White looking for an opening down the right side on Klay Thompson. Spins, kick out to the wing. Jaylen, catch and shoot. Three is good. It's a 14-2 Boston run, and game one is now a two-point game with 8:11 to go. Boston down five. Jaylen turns the corner, attacks the paint, scoops to the left hand, and it goes.
Jaylen putting on the show out here. These people in the Bay, remember me?
Big fourth quarter here for Jaylen Brown. He's got 10 already in the quarter.
I feel like if you put the ball in my hands more often than not, I'm going to put ourselves in a good position to win. And tonight I got going in the fourth quarter, and I made some really great reads, and we was able to go on a run and helped us come back to win the game.
Just really an incredible performance late by Jaylen Brown in game one. The Celtics went up the Golden State Warriors in the NBA Finals. 92-80 at the beginning of the fourth quarter. And then Jaylen Brown goes on to score or assist on 14 straight points. So I know, you know, many people are like, well, it's about the role players. That's why they pulled that off. And look, it was a great game by White and Al Horford. I love, you know, pissed dad strength Al Horford. We've got to see that now a couple of times during this run. And they were really good. This all stemmed from Brown and how he played in that fourth quarter. That's ultimately why they won this game. So it still is about one of their superstars, which I do think that Jaylen Brown is, or just maybe a tick below. So awesome performance there. We will continue to take your calls on the Celtics. Just quickly, I did want to touch on this. Now, two straight Fridays, we have gotten the late Friday five-ish news dump from the Boston Bruins. Real sneaky Bruins. Let's just try to slide that in there as everyone's focused on the Celtics and the fact they're in the NBA Finals. Last night, they announce, just putting that out there on the official Bruins Twitter account, that three of their defensemen underwent surgery, and two, including the most important one, will be out not weeks, months. Charlie McAvoy, arthroscopic surgery on his left shoulder yesterday. He's expected to miss 6 months. Following the news the prior Friday, right around the same time, news dump, everyone getting ready for game 6 at home, Celtics Heat. Yeah, Celtics got to close out tonight. Hey, by the way, Brad Marchand, double hip surgery, out 6 months. What, huh? He's out till December. McAvoy's out till December. Also yesterday in that announcement, Grizzly right shoulder surgery. He's going to be out till November. Mike Riley, ankle surgery on his right ankle. He'll probably be ready by the time the season starts. But no McAvoy, no Grizzlick, no Marchand. No McAvoy, no Marchand until December. They're effed. And I think it also speaks to what's going on with Patrice Bergeron. Because you could also ask, well, what the hell did these guys wait for? Why did they wait so many weeks, you know, after the season was over to finally get these surgeries? They know Saint Patrice ain't coming back, so we'll ease into the season next year. They're too talented to like tank. I wish they would tank. I think tanking can help you. Case in point, New York Rangers now up 2-0 Eastern Conference Finals against Tampa Bay Lightning. The Bruins, like, they're too good to tank. They're just gonna be meh. And the first few months of the season, I think, well, get ready to watch a lot of the Providence Bruins. But I just think it's, frankly, kind of gross how they've handled this with these late Friday news dumps while everybody's focused on the Celtics. It's real sneaky. Maz said weaselly yesterday. It's the perfect term for it. Just real, real weaselly. All right, Lakar in Boston on the Celtics next year on Gaspar Murray. Hi, Lakar.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, what's up?
The problem is that they went on the road, but can they take care of business at home? It seems like every time when they steal a road game, they end up giving it back.
It's a good question, Lakar. I think my normal partner, who will be joining me in 20 minutes, has asked whether or not the Celtics can deal with success. I have my questions about that as well. Again, case in point, game 6. Also, game 3 of the Eastern Conference Finals, too. Like, I don't know, you have a chance to go up 2-1, you just killed them in game 2 down in Miami, and it's basically a no-show. I know they crawled back late, but that game was ugly. What is that, B-Rob? Is it, I'm a simple man. It's a simple take from a simple man. I mean, I tend to think maybe it's a little too much Seaport doing for the boys. I don't know what it is, but they certainly have been better on the road than they have been at home.
3-4 at home in the last two rounds is bananas for the playoffs. I simply think a lot of it is the lack of urgency or the getting too comfortable, because they usually came home off wins for these last two rounds, whether it was, you know, game 6 or obviously even, you know, the chance to close out, the big game 5 against the Bucks in round two, which obviously was a complete collapse down the stretch. But it's been an issue of this team all year long, and they keep talking about it, and it keeps, you know, coming back up to the surface. So we'll see here if the Warriors in the NBA Finals is enough for them to actually, you know, back up the words on that front. But they relax. This has been this team's MO throughout the last few postseasons of this core.
Vince in the car. You're next here on Gaspar Murray. Hi, Vince.
Hey, guys. So for the media, beloved media figure discussion, just throwing out there, Jackie McMullen, pretty beloved.
Yep, Jackie is another good one. Jackie, who I've never met, but I've never heard anyone say like a bad, disparaging word about Jackie McMullen. Every piece she puts out, must read. Basketball knowledge through the roof. Yeah, no, I think she would also make like universally beloved New England media person. Doesn't necessarily have to be all sports, too, because I know I've seen some of the tweets. Again, I'm talking like this stemmed from Al Caprillion. Good evening, who I made subtle nods to yesterday in the headlines because it was Nathan Eovaldi against James Caprillion, I imagine, no relation. Let's go to John in the car next year on Gaspar Murray. Hi, John.
What's up, guys? Maybe it's a weatherman thing, but what about Harvey Leonard and the late Dick Albert? Those are two good guys that
Dick
I think
Albert,
really likes.
Without question, makes my list. Yep, yeah. Ducky. Loved seeing him. If I was waiting on a snow day for everyone, loved seeing Dick Albert in the morning. You're up, crossing your fingers, like, show my school. Yes.
And what a legend.
And Harvey Leonard just recently retired, correct?
Yeah, I think he just finished like within the last month or two.
Because there was a lot of outpouring from him. I saw all over Instagram and social media, everyone else. Yep, I think those two make it. You also wanted to mention something about Pedro Martinez, I see.
Yeah, I think honestly, I don't even know how that one's a question. I mean, like, I know that you love Brady, Murray, but we had Brady for 21 years, and like he was dominant for basically the whole time. There, like, what more prime can you squeeze out of Brady?
Right.
Whereas Pedro wasn't long enough, in my opinion. Like you said, like his start. I remember going to a Sox Yankees game where it was Pedro versus Clemens, and it was more exciting than any playoff game of any sport that I've ever been to in my life. I miss Pedro so much, not just because of how great he was as a player, but he's probably also my favorite post-game interview of any player in any sport ever. Great personality.
Yeah, and John, thanks for the call. And, Maz has occasionally, mentioned stories, and there are some that are certainly not made for air, but Maz loved covering Pedro and said he was always a great quote and hysterical and You know, he's a guy that's like, what you see is what you get. And, yeah, nothing. His starts those days and in the buzz in the city, it really will never be replicated. And this came from, it was 23 years ago yesterday, again, Boston Sports Info on Twitter, reminded me of this. 23 years ago yesterday, it was one of the top five buzziest, most electric sporting events I've ever attended in my life. Pedro mowing down the Atlanta Braves. 16 strikeouts at Fenway, and I still remember it to this day. It is a regular season game, early June. Like who cares about an early June Red Sox game at this point, you know, unless you're like a hardcore, like Carrabas or Milliken. Like, it's just the sport and the buzz about it's never going to be the same. But that era, oh, it's just the best, the absolute best. Long commercial-free segment coming up next. Continue to mix in your phone calls. Celtics, beloved media personalities. You want to talk about Pedro? Hey, I'll do that all day. And we'll lead into the Sports Hub Celtics show, where we'll be joined by Mr. San Francisco himself, old sleepyhead Chris Gasper, slated to join us here for the Sports Hub Celtics show here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
This is Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5 The Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com. Is 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Sounds like fact, not opinion to me.
This is Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It is Gasper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Coming up in less than 10 minutes, the official Sports Hub Celtics show here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. And yes, I am occasionally reminded by those of you on Twitter, and it's fine. I understand. Like, you gave up on this team. You hated this team. It's true. And I would usually start the Sports Hub Celtics show around mid-November, early December, by saying it was a contractual obligation and they were a chore to watch. I own that because that was the truth at the time. Chris and I have mentioned it here over the last few weeks. It is still tough for me to wrap my head around this insane turnaround for this team. I've never seen anything like it. I've tried to compare it to 2018 and the Patriots, when that felt like that season was over after they lose back-to-back with that Miami miracle, and then they lose in Pittsburgh, and it's like, well, this is all coming apart at the seams. It's over. And then they had that kind of improbable turnaround in the postseason. But then again, it's still Brady and the whole aura with Belichick and all that. So, like, are you really surprised? Not really. Teams crapping down their leg, like, you know, the then San Diego Chargers coming in here after they're having a great season. So, but it was still like the Pats thing. This, with this group, where many of us, and I think rightfully during, you know, before the turnaround, we're saying, you know, break up Tatum and Brown, trade off Marcus Smart. Like, the thing was coming apart. It was awful. This last, like, year and a half, 2 years for this team. It's like, oh, God, like, this is never going to change here. And boy, has it ever. I don't remember anything like it. I really don't. Quickly, with as we have Brian Robb covering the Celtics for Mass Live, back with us producing the show. Good night, bad night, somewhere in between for Jason Tatum in game one.
I mean, it leans closer to bad night for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you go 3 of 17, and a lot of those looks are wide open. And yeah, credit to him. He 13 assists, obviously better than, you know, not doing that. But that was a situation where they need him to win a lot better to win this series. I'll give him this credit, though, that has maybe progressed in his career, Jim. And I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. I think maybe earlier this season or even a year ago, that's like a 5 of 25 night for him. And he doesn't get out of the way in the fourth quarter there and handle the thing. Okay, Jalen, this is your show. Here are the keys. I'm going to, like, be a bystander here. I think that's the biggest encouraging part of that performance from my perspective.
And not just 5 of 25. You'd be talking about no defense, like complete give up. And so, yeah, you know, look, it's sports radio, and especially on Felger and Maz, we don't really deal in a lot of gray areas. But, if I'm being fair, I think it's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. Like, I just, like, in terms of the facilitation, that he didn't turn the ball over all that much. It was just two turnovers, and that he actually continued to play defense on what was an awful night for him offensively. That's good.
Did you see any complaining from him during that game?
Like, only once when he missed. When he hit his first three. So okay. The first points of the game by the Celtics, he hits the three and he immediately turns to the ref and he does like Italians look at it like the affangul. And he, you know, when you do it, you know, I remember my grandmother and my mother doing it, you know, early road rage in the 80s. Like, ah, you. He did one of these like, hey, I got hit in the arm. And that was it. That's the only time I remember it. He didn't bitch the refs. He got back and played defense. So that's all good. And the shooting, again, was the offensive night was awful. You need better from your superstar. But, yeah, it does lean bad. But all those other things, again, like you said, we all know, like, if this was the first 2 months of the season or up until the turnaround, oh, forget about it. Like, it would be awful for him on both ends the rest of the night.
Yeah, so that's when you just talk about, and if you want to credit him for that, if you want to credit Ime for getting through to these guys, for that being like, hey, even when you're sucking, you have to play through it, and you can't give up in other parts of the game because we're not good enough to overcome that. So that's obviously something. That's how you become a finals team, and that's how you potentially win a title here.
Jason in the car on the Celtics as we get ready for game two tomorrow night. Hey, Jason.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I just had a quick Celtics take that I haven't heard yet and a nomination. This is going to sound crazy, and it won't make any sense. This is why I called the show. But in game one, I was rooting for the Celtics to keep it close but not go out to a big lead. Be down 2 points at the end of the quarter, that's fine. Up 3 points, that's fine. But I have a feeling like they're better off when the other team is close or they're even having to come back from a loss. I think they focus. I was dreading them being middle of the third quarter, up by 12. I know that doesn't make any sense, but I think it actually does. They're better off if they let Golden State hang around and they have to focus for the whole game and not come out to a big lead.
Well, I think that, Jason, you know, I don't think that that's that crazy because I think it speaks to their, you know, we question whether or not they know how to handle success. I mean, look at how they've played at home during this run, so maybe that's part of it. If they have, like, a big lead, they're willing to kind of take their foot off the gas a little bit and all of a sudden, you know, they're down or it's a tie game. I get what you mean.
Yeah, they're better coming back than they are having to hold on. I don't think they tighten up as much when they have to knuckle down and erase a 7-point, you know, lead by the other team. My nomination is Mike Gorman of the Celtics because as much as people go hot and cold, and I know you guys and Felger, you know, don't really care for some of the Celtics media or these Celtics bobos, Mike Gorman seems to be universally liked by all Celtics people.
Without question, Jason. Yeah, B-Rob named him right off the top. I felt terrible that I forgot about him. Like, he's an instant. Yeah, beloved New England media personality. Yeah, Mike Gorman is on that Mount Rushmore, if you will. JoJo in Nashua, next here on Gaspar Murray. Hello, JoJo.
Hey, Jim.
Hey.
Been in the conversation of most beloved media writers in New England. I think Danny Roach is up there, if he hasn't been said already.
I said him right off the top. Yeah, I think Roach is.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's all good.
All right. Go Celtics.
All right, take care. Yeah, so B-Rob, I know you've had some issues and you haven't been able to cover these games. What was that? Were you even at game 7 or no? You've been
no. Yeah. No, so I've been remote for that one, but I'll be back at the rest of the series here starting from when they're back in Boston.
How was the whole Miami experience, by the way?
It's a scene that I hadn't really experienced it in full yet, but I'll just say I was out to dinner on like a Wednesday night randomly at an outdoor dining place, and then we had fireworks and like smoke thrown at us at 9:30 on a random Wednesday night at this place, and it's just like turning into a club.
Oh, from the restaurant.
From the restaurant, inside the restaurant, at the dinner table.
Yeah. Miami for me is, like, I love the beach. Like, it's just, I mean, it's a beautiful place in terms of just, like, being on the beach. And, you know, the weather, fantastic. But that place is it's a bit much. And it's one of the only places I've been to. Now, granted, lesson learned, I wouldn't stay there again. You have to do a little bit more research where you're staying, I think. If you're specifically staying on South Beach, we stayed at the Clevelander, I think one of my first times there, and you check into the room. But I've heard this with other hotels as well down there. You check into the room, and what you don't want to see is earplugs. You know you're in for it whenever you check into a hotel room, and you're like, huh, why do they supply earplugs? Around 1 a.m., you'll know why, when you can't sleep. And all you hear is boom, 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 awesome. I just want to go to bed. Why am I in this hellscape where people will be up all night because they're all amped up on cocaine? So Miami, not really, especially at this age, not a place for me. I don't know if you had to deal with any of that, but it did sound like that at a dinner where you just want to, you're finishing up, you know, the clink of the utensils on the plate. Maybe you're going to look at a dessert menu and all of a sudden it's boom, 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 fireworks, like party, like, oh, no. No, dial that back. It's a place for young men. Miami is certainly one of those places I kind of want nothing to do with at this point in my life.
I was like wondering, like, what does it look like on a weekend if that's a Wednesday night, a random Wednesday night?
Oh, yeah. No, I wouldn't wish that on many people. Just not. It's not for me. You know, 20 years ago, maybe. Now, not so much. All right, get you caught up with the headlines. There's a little Patriots nugget that just came over the Twitter sphere here, so I'll update you with that. And then we'll get into the Sports Hub Celtics show, where hopefully we'll talk to Chris Gasper, who's woken up out on the West Coast, San Francisco time. I get it. But hopefully Gasper will be joining me here for this hour of the Sports Hub Celtics show next here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Now, it's time to talk Celtics.
Throw a step blocked by Jaylen Brown.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show.
Over the shoulder pass for Al Horford with a two-hand slam.
With Gasper and Murray on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right. I mean, we've been a lot of Celtics for the first hour of Gasper and Murray, but this is officially the Sports Hub Celtics Show. Noon, Saturdays. Typically this time of year, these last few years, we're not doing it, but we are continuing to do it because the Celtics continue to play up one game to none in the NBA Finals over the Golden State Warriors with the 120-108 win over Golden State Thursday night. A big night for Jaylen Brown. I thought that he was the catalyst in that big fourth quarter. Al Horford, again, huge too, 6 3-pointers. Good night for Derek White and others, some of those role players, but I think that Jaylen Brown was the catalyst after back and forth.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.